Well, Genesis chapter 46, look at verse 1. And Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will make of thee a great nation. I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again, and Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes. I suppose that one of my least favorite things to do in the world is moving. I hate to move. Now, fortunately, we've lived in the same house for the last 15 years, so I've not done a lot of moving. We are right now toying with the idea of putting our house on the market at the beginning of the year, hoping I could get a bunch of people in a bidding war for it, somebody pay more for it than what it's worth, and then that would necessitate a move. But I despise moving. Some of y'all moved this year. The Eberts right now, they're moving in. And the Maynards moved. The Bertrams, they enjoy moving. I think in the 5 years that I've known the Bertrams, they've moved four times. And so some people enjoy moving. Others of us, we don't care to move at all. Moving is when you discover that you have accumulated a lot of stuff that you don't need nor want any longer. There is the packing. There is the loading the truck. Do you hire a moving company or do you have to do it yourself? You find out who your true friends are when you move. Those who will not answer your phone call, they're probably not true friends. It is when you can get anybody you can find to come over and help and feed them cheap pizza as their reward. You have to deep clean the house when you leave for the next family. Probably have to do some new work on the new house before you move in. It's not just packing up and moving out. Now you've got to unpack and move in. Because you can't live out of boxes forever. I hate to move. Well, Genesis chapter 46 is moving day for Jacob. We've come a long way in the story of Joseph, and today is really what it is all built up to. We know that in the providence of God, that God had Joseph in Egypt for this particular time to provide a way for his family to move down into Egypt during the famine that is going on at this particular time. There's been a reconciliation in the previous chapters between Joseph and his brothers, and now they have gone back to Canaan to share that good news with their father. We saw that in chapter 45. And after the initial shock wears off, Jacob determines that I will go to Egypt and I will see my son before I die. And so now, Jacob and all his family, 70 souls in all, are packing up and moving, not across town, but they are literally moving across country. This is a big transition. And as I read and reread and reread this passage, I thought about major transitions in life that all of us encounter. Obviously, moving, relocating across country, that's a major transition, but that's not the only kind of transitions that we encounter. When a teenager graduates from high school and some go straight to college, some go straight to a career, some go straight into marriage, others go straight back to their parents' couch, whatever the case might be, that's a major transition. When you change career paths, that's a big move. When you go from a disease from a healthy body to a disease that's going to be with you for the rest of your days, that's a big transition. From singleness to marriage, from marriage to widowhood. Life has its ebbs and its flows to it, and some of those changes are life-altering. We have a wedding taking place in just a couple of weeks. That's a major life move. And in fact, if it's a Friday or Saturday, I got the date down somewhere. But when this wedding takes place, and Jaden will be standing at the front of the aisle or the altar, and the music stops, and then the doors open, and here Leanne comes marching down with her dad and that long flowing white gown, and everybody turns around, forgets that Jaden is in the room, and all eyes are upon Leanne Taylor. And Leanne, when you walk down that aisle, everybody there is going to be thinking the exact same thing. What has this poor girl gotten herself into? There would be so many prayers that would go up during that time. That is a major move. And so you can imagine how big of a move that this is for Jacob. Because it comes on the heels of learning that Joseph is not dead. It comes at the behest of his sons whom he did not trust. It means that he's leaving the only land that he's known, and he's 130 years old on top of it. But he knew that this transition, as scary as it might be, was God's will. This is God moving him. And when you move into a major transition, a major decision, a major area, major change of life, whether it is something that you do or something that God has done in you, it helps to study the circumstances of Jacob's move to give us some guidance in those major transitions of life. What do you do when God moves you? That's what I see in chapter 46. I say, first of all, that when it is moving day, that there must be a faithful departure. Look at verse number 1. Let me explain it to you. Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. You may remember the chapter before that Joseph had instructed his brothers not to even bother bringing all their belongings down to Egypt. He would provide everything for them that they needed. So they had taken those wagons that Pharaoh had provided, and they'd gone back to basically get their families. And all that they're taking back are their families and their livestock. And the day arrives when Jacob hauls up into one of those wagons, and the wagon train begins to pull away. And maybe he looks back and he watches as the old homestead fades in the distance until finally he can't see it anymore. And he turns around and his eyes forward to Egypt. They leave Hebron, and the first place that they come to is Beersheba, which is roughly 25 miles away. So they either get there at the end of the day or maybe the second day. Now Beersheba is a significant place in Israel's life and the life of Jacob and the fathers before him. For one thing, here's what you need to know about Beersheba. Beersheba was the farthest southern city in Canaan. Sometimes the boundaries of Canaan was called from Dan to Beersheba, from Dan to Beersheba. Well, Dan is the farthermost northern city of the boundary. Beersheba was the farther southern city of the land. And so Dan's way up in north and Beersheba's way down in the south. This is the last stop between Canaan and Egypt. Once you leave Beersheba going south, you have left the promised land. So at that last city, Jacob stops and he offers a sacrifice. Well, there's more significance to that. Come back to Genesis chapter 21. And I'll show you a little bit of the significance of Beersheba in his family. Genesis chapter 21, this takes us back to the days of Abraham. Verse 31, Abraham, wherefore he called that place Beersheba, because there they swear both of them, that thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech rose up, and Pichel, the chief captain of his host, and they returned into the land of the Philistines. And Abraham planted a grove in Beersheba and called thereon the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. In chapter 21, Abraham and Abimelech, they get into dispute over a well that some of Abimelech's servants had tried to take away. And Abraham was bold in claiming what God had given him, and he wouldn't concede it to a heathen king. And so he plants a grove of trees as a testimony that this land belongs to a seed, and he calls it Beersheba. That's where Beersheba got its start. Come to chapter 26. Genesis chapter 26. And now we're with Isaac. Genesis 26, verse 23. And he, Isaac, went up from thence to Beersheba. And the Lord appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee and will bless thee and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. And he builded an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants digged a well. Isaac, the father of Jacob, has been so prosperous in Gerar that the men are envious of him. They've driven him out. So he comes to Beersheba, he digs a well, he builds an altar, he pitches a tent, there's a message and all of that. But it's at Beersheba that God speaks to him and reaffirms the covenant that he made with Abraham, special place. Look at Genesis chapter 28. Genesis 28, now we're with Jacob. Genesis 28, verse 10, Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. Jacob had to leave leave his home after that whole ordeal with the birthright. He's going to Haran, to his uncle Laban, to find a wife. He passes by Beersheba. That has been his home as a child. So Beersheba, it's a special place for his grandfather, his father. It's a special place for Jacob. And he couldn't just drive by it. He had to stop and he had to build an altar and he had to make a sacrifice to God, because this was the place that God had covenanted with him and with his father and with his grandfather. And he stops there and he recognizes the promises of God that were made at this place. And by the way, this is the last sacrifice that him or any of his seed will make in Canaan for the next 400 years. Jacob didn't know it. He'll never see the land of Canaan again. He'll come back in 17 years, but they're going to bring his body back in 17 years and bury him. That's the next time that he comes. But he would never see it again in his life. He's leaving a heathen land, Canaan. He's going to another heathen land, Egypt. There is one difference, and I believe that this difference really is important. Canaan was home to pagan people, but they were disjointed. There wasn't a one united people. They were all scattered. But in Egypt, it is one nation. It is one nationality, and there they worship all the same gods, and even Pharaoh himself is a divine to the Egyptians. So in Canaan, their worship of Jehovah God is just one more religion in a sea of a lot of religions. But when they get to Egypt, where everybody has one religion, everybody worships the same God, their worship of Jehovah is really going to stand out. There's going to be greater focus on them and on the fact that they didn't worship like the rest of the Egyptians. And Jacob understood that. And so Jacob makes a sacrifice before he steps foot into that land to say, we are relocating, but we're not changing. We're going to have the same God there as we did here. It will be a new land. It will be a new experience for us, but we're bringing God with us. It may be harder to worship God in this new place, but we're not leaving the promises behind. We're not leaving the covenants behind. We're not leaving our God behind. We're going to be a faithful people, even in Egypt. Jacob makes a sacrifice that reflects the faithfulness of God, and I believe that it also reflects his own faithfulness. It reflects God's faithfulness, because this is the place where God makes this covenant, and this covenant has been confirmed with his family. So Jacob is testifying to his faith in that covenant. And while Jacob's faith has been dead, all but dead for the past 22 years, it seems that now his faith has been revived and he's going into this new phase of life. And it's important. He's going into this new phase of life with his faith intact. And here's what I would say to you. It is important, no matter the relocation, no matter the move, no matter the phase of life, it is important to go into every transition with your faith in God guiding you. To set out on any new journey, committed to God, determined that you will be as faithful in the new journey as you were in the old journey. I say to you that Jacob left for Egypt faithfully. It's a faithful departure. When you leave home and you go off to college somewhere, and you finally are away from your parents' watchful eye, you ought to be as faithful there as you were when you were home. If God moves you from health to sickness, then worship God in the sick body just as faithfully as you did in the healthy body. When you move from singleness to marriage and you two start your own home, then take the same convictions and the same standards and the same desires into that new home. That's not a time to change your convictions. If your career moves you to a new city, don't become a nominal Christian in that new city. No, be as devoted to church there as you were here. I believe that Jacob is making this sacrifice for himself. I believe it is also a statement to his boys. Because all these boys are grown men now with their own family. They can do what they want to when they get to Goshen. And I believe that Jacob is saying, boys, let's don't forget God when we get to Egypt. Jehovah was my father's God. He's my God. He needs to be your God too. We're relocating, but we're not changing. I say that when God moves you, whatever the stage may be, there needs to be a faithful departure. But understand that even though there's faithfulness in departure, that there are going to be, secondly, some fearful doubts. Look at verse 2. God speaking to Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob, he said, here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt. For I will there make of thee a great nation. I will go down with thee into Egypt. And I will also surely bring thee up again. And Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eye. Just because you're determined to be faithful doesn't mean that there's not going to be some fears. His excitement at being reunited with his long lost son is going to be tempered by the uncertainty of life in Egypt. His outward testimony of faith in that sacrifice doesn't mean that there are not also some inward struggles and some uncertainties. And some say that faith and doubt can't mix, but I think it has in my heart at times. I'm not sure that having faith means having all faith. Having faith doesn't mean that all of your questions have been answered, that there are no more uncertainties. So as Jacob went to sleep that night, because God spoke to him in visions of the night, as Jacob went to sleep that night, his mind must have began to entertain some fears and some questions and some uncertainties. Questions like, you know, God promised my descendants all the land of Canaan, but here we're leaving that land, so how are we going to possess the land that we're leaving? Questions like, we've left everything behind in Hebron. And by now, our neighbors have probably helped themselves to it. So how exactly are we going to make ends meet in this new land? Jacob's 130 years old twice. Twice he admits that he's ready to die. So is this really the best move for a 130-year-old man to make? How is the covenant going to be fulfilled? Am I really doing the right? I know I heard the voice of God, but it doesn't make sense. And any time that you move into a new phase of life, a new direction, a major transition, there are going to be some questions. So it is in the night at Beersheba that God speaks to him. When there is an apparent conflict between the promises of God and the provisions of God, when though he has been given the name Israel, he still feels like he's Jacob. When he offers great sacrifices with faith in the morning, but at night he's restless with strong doubts, God speaks to him. And there's two things that God does. First of all, there's a confrontation. And you probably have picked this up in verse number 1 and 2, how that Jacob is called by two names. He's called by his new name, Israel, but then he's called by his old name, Jacob, in the same thing. And it's very perplexing that he's called by both names. So hold your finger here. Let's see if we can trace it. Come back to Genesis chapter 32. Genesis chapter 32. And here's where God changed his name, verse 24. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh. And the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will not let thee go except thou bless me. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, thy name should be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. This is the night that Jacob wrestled with the angel of the Lord and was touched in the thigh. He would walk with a limp from this time on. And part of the blessing that he received from the Lord that night was that he was given a new name, Israel. Now, God had changed Abram's name and Sarah's name, but when he changed Abraham's name, he really just added, he didn't give him a new name. He went from Abram to Abraham. He modified his name. But here, he gives Jacob a brand new name. Jacob, now your name is going to be, Jacob means deceiver. It means supplanter. Israel means fighter of God, power of God. You have wrestled with God, a prince that has thou power with God. And so God changes the name. Well, go to Genesis 35. Genesis 35. I'll run these verses quickly. Genesis 35, verse 9. And God appeared unto Jacob again when he came out of Padan Aram and blessed him. And God said unto him, thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called anymore Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. So now Jacob has another encounter with God. It's at Bethel. And God again tells him that his name is changed to Israel. By the way, God told him that back in Genesis 32. From Genesis 32 to Genesis 35, Jacob is never called Israel. He's still called Jacob. So now God comes to him again, and he's reaffirming that promise. And in verse 11 and 12, he again tells Jacob that he's going to be fruitful. Kings will come from his descendants. The land of Israel will be given to his descendants. Here is the confusing thing. From this point on, he is called both Jacob and Israel. Now he says right here in verse number 10, thy name shall not be called anymore Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. He's called Jacob a lot after this. So whatever the Lord meant, he can't mean that no one will ever call you by that name ever again. It could be that you will not be known only as Jacob. You will have a new identity to go along with the old. Maybe that's what he's talking about. Some have suggested that Jacob represents the old character and Israel represents the new character. So when he's acting like Jacob, he's called Jacob. When he's acting like Israel, he's called Israel. Sounds great. Wish it was true. Not so. Because sometimes he's called Jacob and Israel side by side. Psalm 53, verse 6, when God bringeth the captivity of his people, Jacob shall rejoice, Israel shall be glad. It's used interchangeably. And so I have traced it, and I've traced it, and I've traced it. And I don't know. I don't know why it is. So here's what I did. I traced the name change just in the story of Joseph to see if I could find a pattern. And here's what I thought. If his name is called Israel before Joseph is sold into slavery, great faith. And then after that, faith dies and he's called Jacob until he learns that Joseph is yet alive. And from there on out, he is called Israel again. I would have a pattern, and I would have a message for you tonight. It's not so. He's called Jacob. He's called Israel. He's called Israel. He's called Jacob before, after. I don't know. God has told him that he gives him a new name. He himself calls him by his old name. In fact, right here, God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. Did God intend that to be a rebuke? Is he confronting him about his character and his lack of faith in this instance? He's confronting him somehow. But here's what he does is not only does he confront him, Jacob, Jacob, but he gives him confirmation. Here's what we do know, is that God speaks to Jacob that night and he assures him, I'll be with you. I will protect you. I will be your strength. And just as Jacob knew about the promises made to his fathers, Jacob probably also knew about the prophecy that God had made with his father Abraham back in Genesis 15. Do you remember what God told Abraham in Genesis 15? He told him that your seed is going to go into a strange land and it's going to be afflicted for 400 years. And Jacob probably saw this move into Egypt as the beginning of the fulfillment of that prophecy. How is God going to protect us during this time? And what God does right here is he gives him new hope with old promises. Jacob, big move. I know you have doubts and uncertainties, but I will be with you. You know, there is a measure of uncertainty about every season of life. When you make a move and you have a family that is dependent upon you, when you are making a life-altering choice, when you've weighed all the options and you think that you know the right one, but it's not written in the sky like you wished that it was. We doubt ourselves often, but we must not let that doubt spill over into doubt of God. Jacob still doesn't know how, but he now knows who. The process is not as important as knowing, having faith in the person. And for me, maybe for all of us, sometimes I have faith and sometimes I doubt. Sometimes I am Jacob and sometimes I am Israel. And sometimes I get on the wagon with a whole lot of confidence and sometimes I get off with a whole lot of doubt. And sometimes I worship on Sunday only to be discouraged on Monday. And sometimes I have confidence in the promises of God while at the same time questioning the provisions of God. But don't let being human paralyze you from following God, because doubts and confusions and uncertainties, what it should do is it should drive us to God and to his word. Jacob has not had a vision of God in years, but now he sees God in a fresh vision. And that's what you and I need, is we need a fresh glimpse of God in his word to be able to say, that's my God and he will carry us through some fearful doubts. It's interesting to me that in this story, Jacob twice confesses that he's ready to die. Look back at chapter 45 and verse 28, the last verse. Israel said, it's enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die. And then chapter 46 and verse 30, where he finally sees Joseph, here's the first thing he says. Israel said unto Joseph, now let me die, since I have seen thy face, because thou art yet alive. He's 130 years old and he thinks that his life is over. And for two decades, he's lived like every day was his last day. He wasn't really living at all. He's given up hope that things would ever get better. He really expects to die as a sad and a lonely man. Little did he know, he's got 17 more years. 17 more 4 years, seeing Joseph, watching his grandchildren grow up. He was so consumed with the past that he couldn't see any future. And at the risk of sounding like Joel Osteen, because this is really a Joel Osteen-y type phrase, you may need to quit looking backwards and start believing God for something that is ahead of you. It is just striking to me that here is an old man who believes that his days are done. And God still has a lot of living left for him to do. When God moves you from phase to phase, make sure there's a faithful departure. Be as faithful in the new phase of life as you were in the old. And just know that there are going to be some fearful doubts. But be assured, if God's in it, there will be fruitful developments. Come back to chapter 46 and verse 5. Jacob rose up from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, and their little ones, and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And I won't read the rest of it, but most of this chapter is taken up with counting all the descendants of Jacob that went into Goshen with him. We covered alleged discrepancies in Problem Text and Bible Institute. This was one of them in this chapter, and I won't address it tonight. All his sons and his grandsons make up 66 people. When you count him, Joseph, and his two sons who are already in Egypt, you have 70 souls. And I give you a little bit of perspective right here. At this point in Genesis 46, it has been approximately 230 years since God came to Abraham and promised him a son. Or 230 years since God gave Abraham a son. 10 years earlier, he had promised that son, and that son would multiply, and that seed would multiply as the stars of the sky and the sands of the sea. 230 years later, after the son is born, the total descendants of that promised seed numbers 70. 70 in 230 years? That's a long way from stars of the sky, sands of the sea. These sons and their sons will be in Egypt for 400 years. And when they come out, they will number in the millions. These 70 people will become so fruitful under pressure that they will actually be perceived as a threat to the Egyptians. The Egyptians will beg them to leave and to return to Canaan. In fact, it's interesting to me, only God could do this. Pharaoh, the Egyptians financed their move to Goshen. The Egyptians are going to finance their move back to Canaan. Only God could do that. God moves them to a strange land, and while there, they become the fruitful and multiplied nation that God had said that they would become. Something else interesting to me, and I'm going to be done. This small clan of people, these 70 people, they make an impact on their surroundings through their unique worship of Jehovah God. Three times in this story, there is a reference to Joseph and his brothers being Hebrews. Hebrews. There's only 70 of them, but they're very clearly marked out as a distinct group of people in the land of the Canaanites. They are a small group of people, but they made a big impact because of who they were and their relationship to Jehovah God. They go into this strange land. This huge move with all these uncertainties, with all of these questions, 70 strong. And while there, God makes them a fruitful people. And I believe God can do the same for you. That when God transitions you, whatever that stage of life might be, you take God with you. You just follow God. And in that new stage of life, God can make you fruitful and multiply you. And when you think that ministry's over, life is over, God may have so much more in that next stage. One verse, I'm done, Genesis 37, back to the very beginning of the story. Genesis 37. Genesis 37 and verse 2, and you'll find this phrase 10 times in the book of Genesis. These are the generations of Jacob. This is the beginning of the story of Joseph. And we read from 37 through 50 as the story of Joseph. Or perhaps you see it now, it is as much the story of Jacob as it is the story of Joseph. It is not just what God did in Joseph's life, it is what God was doing in all of their lives. For all of those years, Jacob has given up hope. God is still working behind the scenes, silent but not absent. And when it was time, God sent a wagon down to Hebron to get Jacob and to bring him into a new place. And this is where God would reward his faith and make him a fruitful nation. So can I encourage you to just have faith in God, even on moving day? I don't like to move. And I don't like changes. I'm slow to bite on new ideas and new ministries. I like being a comfortable and settled soul. But when God moves you to new places, you can trust Him. Take those doubts, take those fears, hand them to God, and let what you know about Him overshadow what you don't know about tomorrow. Would you stand with me tonight?